Oh, good evening. We have a new face tonight.
I thought it was a different group at a little later time, but so I just sat until you were finished with the sitting part. I hope you don't mind if I partake in this part.
Not at all. You're perfectly welcome. Anytime. We're just about to start a new study on this material. It's called Bendoa. It's one of the first things that Dogen Zenji ever spoke after he came back from China to back home to Japan. He went to China very dangerous trip. Even it's hard to even imagine how dangerous it was. It's a bit like the Vietnamese when they had to get out of Vietnam, the stories of the boat people and those little fragile boats going across vast waters, very little protection. He spent the time in China with a number of places. He went to temples and studied with different teachers, looking for the answer to the question, if everybody has Buddha nature, if everybody is fine already, why do we have to practice? What's this for? So his teachers in Japan couldn't answer it. They knew that was the teaching. All beings have Buddha nature. And when Dogen came back, he had realized, having met a really fine teacher and finished his training, that the wording was wrong. It was mistaken. That it's not that all beings have Buddha nature, but all beings are Buddha nature itself. It isn't coming from the outside. There isn't any outside for it to come from. Everything comes from home, here. Everything is home, here. It's the being of us. Not any having. It isn't something that we paste on from the outside after working really hard in meditation. It's what is expressed in all that we do. It is our life and our whole expression. And the reason we practice is to express Buddha nature itself. So he came home with this message and spoke in the years that he spent in Japan teaching a vast array of materials, great many of them saying how useless words are. But his next in line student, Ajo, wrote down all of his words and preserved them. And so we have the little teachings he gave to the monks and the large teachings he gave to the monks and the lay people. We have his poems, his musings, all kinds of material that we have that came from this one very wise and interesting person whose primary interest is in words and expression. So this little bit called Bendoa is very early, very new. He talks in it about coming back to Japan to spread the Dharma and to free living beings. That was his vow. So want to tell you what Bendoa means. But basically, it means wholehearted practice or complete practice. I like wholehearted the best. That says the whole thing. It's the life of us that we practice. And truly, as we practice, that's what is called enlightenment. Enlightenment is not something we get. It's something that we express as we sit and as we live. He uses some interesting words in here. Way is one of them. The practice of the way. And that is the word that we have learned in Taoism, is Dao, the way. It can mean enlightenment itself. Anuttara Samyaka Sambodhi, which is what we chant at the end, attain unsurpassed, complete, perfect enlightenment. It was translated as the way because of the Taoists. It also means the Eightfold Path, Buddha's teaching about how to be in the world, the practical instructions on right speech, right effort, right understanding, right livelihood, right meditation, wisdom, view. So it's also means gate. The way is the gate, and we have that in the Bodhisattva vows. We promise to walk through the infinite number of gates. Every moment is a gate to through which we pass. That also is Tao or Do. So practicing the way, the wholehearted practice of the way, is the gift that he's giving, suggesting for us. We have copies of them. Do we have copies of the? So we can pass these out. So you can have these to enjoy at home as well.
So it's chapters or chapter by chapter?
Yes, I think so.
No, I don't know the translator of that book.
Oh, it's not the same book?
No.
Oh.
It's just the one that has the scene on the front.
It could be a new edition. That's why I was asking. You know how they change.
This was in Amazon in print. It's translated by Dan Lightman and Okamura, Suaku Okamura.
This is Okamura and Dan Layton.
Yeah, okay.
Yes.
Does that have a blue sketch of the HUD or the...
Yeah. I know I've seen it around. Mm-hmm.
So So it's not very long. Most of this book is commentaries by Uchiyama Roshi. So, and Uchiyama Roshi is in our family, and very wise also. He has a very light-hearted way of addressing this material, but also makes it very clear and not so not mysterious is what I'm trying to say. It isn't mysterious. It's just how things are, how it is with us. So it also has very good little notes at the bottom of the page, which is always a great kindness, I think.
That's the submission has the notes at the end.
Oh, shame. That's the latest way, but this is so much more useful. But the notes are very helpful. And I hope you study those because they open up whole avenues of understanding, not just of Bendoa itself, but of our practice. So it starts out very simply, and what Uchiyama Roshi says is this is the most simple teaching, the most simple basic teaching of Dogen and of all Buddhists. All Buddha Tathagatas together have been simply transmitting wondrous Dharma and actualizing Anuttara Samyak Sambodhi, incomparable awareness, for which there is an unsurpassable, unfabricated, wondrous method. So it's got kind of weird words. Buddha Tathagata is Buddha itself. Not Buddha himself, but Buddha itself. The whole of Buddha-ness, you could say, of Buddha nature itself. So Buddha Tathagatas are practicing Buddhas who have been simply transmitting wondrous Dharma and actualizing enlightenment, for which there is an unsurpassable, unfabricated, wondrous method. This wondrous Dharma, which has been transmitted only from Buddha to Buddha without deviation, has as a criterion Jijyu Zamai. And Jijyu Zamai is meditation. It's the... He says in the note, samadhi of the self, receiving or accepting is function, or samadhi of self-enjoyment. Or self-fulfillment. G is self, ju is receive or accept, and you is function or use. Samai is samadhi or concentration. So the point is that the this function or use, sama, is not the self that has an object. There is nothing other than or outside of this self. The enjoyment, fulfillment, or satisfaction is the samadhi of the self, in which there is no other. This is not an experience which is somewhere other than right here, right now. So it's not something fancy. It's not something far away. It's not something we have to get and that we might lose. It's receiving the enjoyment of the truth, of the reality of things, of Dharma. He says, everything becomes everything. All becomes all. Jijyu Samadhi is Buddha's practice. To study the Buddha Dharma is to study the self. To study the self is to forget the self. To forget the self is to be enlightened by myriad dharmas. To be enlightened by myriad dharmas is to drop off the body and mind of self and others. This is Jijyu Samadhi. This actually occurs in Zazen. Our experience of Zazen is wordless. And so when we begin to try to use words to explain or express an experience that is an experience, it takes this kind of language in order to point to the experience of meditation. It isn't the experience itself. Is pointing to you. And it goes on this to say, for disporting oneself freely in this samadhi, practicing Zazen in upright posture is the true gate. Disporting oneself freely. You can see us leaping and dancing and swinging through the joyful acceptance of our life as it is. Being as it is. Disporting. Says, although this Dharma is abundantly inherent in each person, it's not manifested without practice. So this is the answer to his question. Why are we practicing? Well, if we're not practicing, then we can't express this Buddha nature that we are. That's why we practice. That is practice. When you let go, this is a very famous statement, the Dharma fills your hands. It is not within the boundary of one and many. When you try to speak, it fills your mouth. It is not limited to vertical or horizontal. Buddhas continuously dwell in and maintain this Dharma, yet no trace of conceptualization remains. Living beings constantly function and use this Dharma, yet it does not appear in their perception. I was with a group of people the other night and in a poetry workshop, and I submitted a poem to be torn apart, and it was a poem about having met a lot of different people on a little walk that I took, and I met coyote and deer, tarantula, millipede. And in the end, I said, "How amazing! All of these, they're all us, something like that." And several people had never heard that before. Had never heard everything called people. Had never heard the idea that everything is connected and is part of the same soup. The same family, that we're kin to the field mouse and the vulture. We're kin to the soldier and the blade of grass. That all things are transmitting Buddha nature as we are transmitting Buddha nature to all things. We can't say it's all one thing because in a way it's all separate. We have a name for each different thing. And yet, it is all one thing. It's totally, totally inseparable, each thing from each thing. There is no place that is not connected. Sometimes people say when they're really in a bad way, "I want to get off. I want to get out of here." But there's no out of here to get. Here is it. Here is us. Here is Buddha. So this is a very cogent statement and worth studying. It's just a couple of paragraphs. He finishes it by saying, "The wholehearted practice of the way, which I am talking about, allows all things to exist in enlightenment and enables us to live out oneness in the path of emancipation. When we break through the barrier and drop off all limitations, we are no longer concerned with conceptual distinctions." And what is the barrier? The barrier is clinging to an idea of the self. Clinging to protecting the story that we make up about us. Staying closed to accepting things as they are. So Uchiyama Roshi has a statement and a whole book that he calls Opening the Hand of Thought. And the Dharma fills your hands. If you open your hands, then everything is present. And we're present with it also. And then Dogen goes on to talk about his trips, his study with his teacher, Myo Zen, before he went to China, and then how he went to China and learned the ways of the five schools of Zen that existed there, and finally met his master, Nyojo, on Mount Taipei, which is still there. There's still a temple there, a monastery. Master Nyojo isn't there anymore, but the practice goes on. He says, says, there he clarified the great matter of lifelong practice and then came home. To spread this Dharma and to free living beings became my vow. I felt like a heavy burden had been placed on my shoulders. So maybe that's enough to begin with. And then mostly this is made up of questions and answers. So once we get to the questions and answers, we can just take it question by question. And before that, we'll do it with a few paragraphs each time and just go slowly up to the questions. I have another translation, which is the new one from Kaz Tanahashi and the San Francisco Zen Center, which is somewhat different from this. And so I'm going to go through that and pick out the differences and share them with you. It's very interesting. Some of it's quite different. Most of it's not, but there are a few things that are quite different. So I'll try to bring that next time also so you can see. And it's different from the earlier one, and Moon in a Dewdrop has a translation of this also, but the new one that they did is different. They've changed their minds about a lot of different things. And of course there are other translations as well, and we don't really know exactly what Buddha Dharma, what Dogen said, because we weren't there. But there's a lot of good juice in this, a lot of good nourishment. I think we should to introduce ourselves around. I'm sorry, I missed that in the beginning.
I'm Ellie. Donald M.
Britt.
Jeffrey.
Sonia.
Kimberly.
Ross.
Cecilia.
Wendy.
And Angie. Emily, were you here before?
No, I come on Wednesday.
That's why you're familiar.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm glad to see you. So are there questions? Ellie?
If all beings are the Buddha nature, and you say we practice to express the Buddha nature, don't we express it anyway? Don't all beings express it?
But awareness of the expression of it is what this is talking about.
Okay. And there was something else that I'm not going to be able to articulate that supports that you said that all beings express it but may not be aware of it.
Yes, okay. Yes. Express it and accept it.
Okay.
And that sounds simple, but actually it's a very big step to completely accept this whole of our being without exception.
So that if we, I know we didn't get into talking about saving beings tonight, but if we express the Buddha nature and accept it and I guess understand that we're doing it, then does that save beings?
Yes, that is saving beings. Okay. That's transmission itself.
Okay.
And it doesn't mean being self-conscious and going around blessing everybody or nothing like that.
Mm-hmm.
It's just being a completely honest and straightforward and completely what you are. And we always think, well, we should be better, you know, than we are, and we should work harder to improve ourselves. But this is about accepting, first step, accepting what is here, and then allowing all beings to be as they are. So that's the saving part. That's what saving all beings, you can say, allowing all beings as they be.
And that's something, that's work that we have to do.
Yes.
And in a way, it relates in an odd way to a saying of Shantideva that I've been kind of mulling over for a while, that the salvation of all beings is accomplished by continuously acknowledging our faults, I think was the way it was translated.
Yes.
But that somehow if we are continuously making an effort to be aware of our whatever, our ignorance, our
foolishness,
yeah, our harmful actions, that then that frees, somehow allows other beings to be.
Well, it allows them to be fools also, for one thing.
To be everything that we are.
Yes. That's the truth of it. Yeah. It doesn't mean we have carte blanche to go out and I don't know, get drunk and throw the TV window out the window or anything. It's just It's about just living an honest and spontaneous life.
Okay.
We don't beat ourselves up.
Right.
It's just acknowledgement.
Because so much of beating ourselves up ends up harming others anyway, one way or another.
And ourselves. Yeah. Yeah. Samia?
I have a hard time with the saving part. I feel like I've put Christianity on hold for a while because of that. You know, I was raised, you witness, and you help people, you save people. Jesus died on the cross to save you. You know, it's a beautiful thought.
Mm-hmm.
And the saving others, to me, I understand it as when I accept people the way they are, I'm saving myself, because this way I can live life and it doesn't bother me the way they're bugging me. So I'm free.
Yes.
Hallelujah. Period.
Well,
I didn't save anybody.
You were setting them free at the same time.
Well, that's great if it happens, but how, you know, how do I know? I don't think it's my job to sit back and see if I set them free.
No, it's not.
It's so tiny. I mean, we come every week, we sit every day, we try, and we think we get it. And then little things piss us off. I'm talking about myself.
Yes, of course.
And it's like, when do we get it? I mean, sometimes it seems like, okay, I got it, and then boom, it's gone.
Well, it. What is it?
The being okay with things the way they are.
I see.
Every moment.
I see.
So back to the saving thing. It's like, I'm running away from Christianity for a while, although I respect it a lot because that's how my parents brought me. They did a good job, you know, go forth to the world, and now I'm here, and here come back the word, the saving. It's like, yeah!
So,
I hope we don't practice because we want to save. I mean, I do want to save myself.
Yes.
From my poor family.
Yes, right.
They have to live with me.
Right. Yes, that's of course. Of course, that's the very first and the most important thing.
Or is it too hard to save myself, therefore I'll try to save somebody else because it's easier?
No. Yeah, that doesn't work. You can't save somebody else that way.
So I'll ask another question. A friend of mine is in horrible depression. She wants to, like, why live? I want to end it, you know. What do I do, Samia? Tell me, you know. And I feel sometimes in moments like this when it's so complicated, taking the focus off oneself
yes.
might help. Like I gave her an exercise, go to the market, make eye contact with people and just smile.
Mm-hmm.
Pretend that you're okay. And maybe you'll start feeling okay.
Yeah.
So sometimes I feel when things are horrible, if we go outside of our me, then you can coax back. Whatever it is.
You drop yourself.
Drop yourself.
Yes. Yes.
So, I don't want to call it cheating of being always present, but sometimes we can't.
Yes, sometimes we can't.
So, we're buying our salvation by going out and going out of our little self.
Mm-hmm.
And then hopefully things will start rolling back to breathing normally and, okay, I can live this life.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's
exactly right. No, that's exactly right. That's how it works. It's the thing that louses us up is our self-clinging, our grasping of ourself.
And it just seems over and over.
Yes. Yes.
You know, it's like every time I think, okay, my daughter really is out of it. You know, she's a teenager, she's selfish, so I get upset. I have a good reason. But then when you really think about it, it's about me.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
Like, when are we ever going to get it? Sometimes disappointing.
Yeah. Moment by moment. We never promise that we're going to be perfect. There's no such thing.
But back to the salvation thing, we're really not here to save other people, are we?
We don't know why we're here.
Doesn't matter.
We're trying to understand our situation and our relationship to everything. Because if you think about it, it's just you looking out of your eyes mm-hmm. at a whole world. Mm-hmm. And so you can't impose salvation on the whole world that you're looking at out of your eyes. You don't have to because already it's already there. It's just up to you to stop being self-conscious and selfish. The less self-conscious and selfish we are, the more freedom we have and the more freedom we offer to others. And that's what saving means. Assuming freedom for ourselves and for others.
Because we live together.
Yes. Because we are each other.
If we lived up in a cave, we're not interacting with people, then that's a different story.
Even living in a cave, we're still connected to everything and everybody. We really can't get away from it. So once we realize that, then whatever we do is what it is. My watch, but I'll bet
it's getting late. It's about almost 10 after.
Oops.
So we probably should.
So I have one thing that I want to add, and it fits in. I gave a little talk on Saturday about this, about expression of our practice. Once we get off the cushion, what do we do? What is our practice otherwise? And encouraged people to cultivate writing practice or drawing or painting or music, or there are innumerable ways of finding ways of dropping the self and pouring oneself into some kind of very wonderful practice. It's something my teacher did, and he was an artist. He did beautiful, beautiful calligraphy. He wrote poems. He did paintings as well as practicing and teaching. And so somebody had the brilliant idea of going to Japan and finding some of his calligraphy and translating them, their little poems. And it's in a literary magazine that's coming out of De Anza College, of all things. And it's in the middle of this literary magazine. Suddenly you have all these beautiful calligraphies and Koban's poems to go with them. I got extras. They cost $18 at the store, but I got them for $10. And so I thought, if anybody wants them, I have a bunch here. And maybe it will inspire you to develop a practice and enjoy it, a dropping off the self kind of practice of drawing or painting or something delicious like that.